The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on.
And you see, that is why I love this country.
Ted Kennedy and Michelle Obama from the Democratic Convention last night. We will play some longer clips of each in a minute. And hello again from the Democratic Convention in Denver. Yesterday we were in the Sheraton Hotel where the New York delegation was holding a breakfast and having that speaking appearance for Hillary Clinton that we carried live. Today we are in the convention center itself on Radio Row, as they call it. That's out near the concession stands that they use for the Denver Nuggets basketball games. And all those concessions are closed, by the way, here at 8 o'clock in the morning Denver time. So finding food here has been a little bit of a challenge this morning, but we'll survive. We are located on the upper level, right next to WBUR Boston Public Radio, where Tom Ashbrook is doing his show on point right now. Hi, Tom. And we will open the phones and, of course, our comments page now for your reactions to last night's speeches, and also for you to tell us how much you care about who any candidate's spouse is. Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or comment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. What did you think of anything from the convention yesterday? And with all this focus on Michelle Obama right now, does it matter to you today? Has it ever mattered to you in any past election who the candidate's wife was? 212-433-WNYC. That, of course, is in the case of presidential nominees. They would have all been wives in the past, or any spouse of any candidate. 212-433-9692. Did you like Laura Bush and couldn't warm up to Teresa Hines Kerry? Did you love Rosalind Carter or Betty Ford but loathe Nancy Reagan? Why does any of this matter? Call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's play, while your calls are coming in, a two-minute excerpt of Michelle Obama's speech last night, the 2 minutes that I think were most central to her message, and you will hear both the personal and the policy in this.
In my own life, in my own small way, I've tried to give back to this country that has given me so much. See, that's why I left a job at a big law firm for a career in public service, working to empower young people to volunteer in their communities, because I believe that each of us, no matter what our age or our background or our walk in life, each of us has something to contribute to the life of this nation. And it's a belief that Barack shares, a belief at the heart of his life's work. See, it's what he did all those years ago in Chicago, setting up job training to get people back to work and after-school programs to keep kids safe, working block by block to help people lift up their families. It's what he did in the Illinois Senate, moving people from welfare to jobs, passing tax cuts for hardworking families, and making sure women get equal pay for equal work. It's what he's done in the United States Senate, fighting to ensure that the men and women who serve this country are welcomed home not just with medals and parades, but with good jobs and benefits and health care, including mental health care. See, that's why Barack's running, to end the war in Iraq responsibly, to build an economy that lifts every family, to make sure health care is available for every American, and to make sure that every single child in this nation has a world-class education all the way from preschool to college. That's what Obama will do as President of the United States of America.
Michelle Obama, in case you missed it, or if you wanted to hear it again from last night's speech at the DNC. With me now, Eddie Glaude, Jr., Princeton Professor of Religion and African American Studies. Hi, Professor Glaude. Welcome back to WNYC. Hello from Denver.
It's always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to the
What were you looking for? What were you looking for from Michelle Obama last night, and what did you see?
Well, I was looking for her to, in some significant way, to address this nagging question. or issue about Senator Obama and Michelle Obama being politically and culturally alien or foreign, that somehow the Obamas were not in sync with mainstream American values. And so we heard over and over again, not only in her speech, but throughout the first day, an emphasis on faith, an emphasis on family, an emphasis on hard work. In some ways, Nancy Pelosi put it, you know, framed it perfectly by calling Senator Obama a 21st century American patriot. And so I thought what Michelle Obama did was to address that explicitly and directly. And I thought she was pretty successful at it. I mean, we got a glimpse at a different model of a first lady. We saw her elegance. We saw her brilliance. But most importantly, I thought we saw the beauty and power of her family, the Robinsons, and locating them in a kind of working-class, blue-collar ethic, and how they, confident with the American dream, produced the improbable, that is, Michelle Obama speaking on the first day of the Democratic National Convention as her husband was poised to make history. So I think they achieved what they set out to achieve.
When you say a different model of first lady, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, first of all,
we've heard that a lot. We certainly heard when, you know, Hillary Clinton became first lady that she was a different model of first lady because she was going to be real policy oriented and she was as educated as her husband and all of that. Is it that? Is it more of that or is it something else?
I think it's more of that. In addition, it's also a black woman from the south side of Chicago. I mean, we know that Michelle Obama, at least some of the reports said that she is vocal, that Senator Obama draws on her for advice or turns to her for advice, not necessarily with regards to specific policies, but she has his ear, and we know that this, at least some of the reports are suggesting that she had some influence on the selection of Senator Biden. We know that she was his boss at one point, and she's a Harvard lawyer. So, I mean, what we're seeing here is really an interesting moment. I mean, one of the things that we have to always deal with, particularly with women, whether they're black or white or brown, is the kind of careful calibration of their power, of their self-assurance in the public domain, because patriarchy is still alive and thriving today. So I think she's going to be a different model in the vein of Hillary Clinton, just simply expanding it and taking it further.
Let's see what some of our listeners thought. Paul in Chatham, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul. Hello from Denver.
Good morning, and thank you. I think that Michelle Obama has become important. First ladies have become important because the Republicans have made them important. They chose to make Theresa Hines Carey an issue. They're trying to make Michelle Obama an issue. And I think that last night she largely diffused the issue for anybody who was listening. What I heard was the American dream come to fruition. Work hard, work within the system, study hard, and you can achieve. Also, I think that she reinforced the whole Republican family values thing. Here is a nuclear family working on their first marriage. We're looking at the McCains, and there are second marriages all over. Apparently, they don't even live together. There are the biographies involved. The New York Times biography this past weekend portrayed.
And Paul, go ahead, finish your sentence. Portrayed Cindy McCain
in a far less than flattering light with a lot of her corporate connections, and I think that the Obamas really exemplify what is meant by the American dream, living it, and I'm proud as hell of them personally. And by the way, I'm a white guy from the Republican suburbs.
Okay, Paul, thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you.
Eddie Glaude, why is it important? Why does America care? I mean, forget for a minute about the race question or, you know, the fact that she has that quote dogging her about the first time she's really proud of her country. Mm-hmm. Why does it matter in general that they do this, what Paul called the Republican family values showing the cute kid, showing what a cute couple they are, all of that stuff. Why does that matter so much?
Well, I mean, there are these proxies for values discourse, right? There are these proxies for a kind of familiarity, that is to say that we're the common folk, right? We're like you. And so how do we get a sense of a candidate's character? How do we understand whether a candidate is decent or not? Well, we have to get a glimpse into their private lives, right? And ever since the Gary Hart debacle, right, what folk do in the bedroom, what folk do in the privacy of their own homes, in their own intimate relationships have become, I think, fair play, particularly in the press, and particularly among campaigns or within campaigns. And so the First Lady's role has increasingly become important because she has, or I guess in this instance, the person becomes a portal to understanding, at least superficially, the kind of character the candidate has. And so to that extent, I suppose the vetting of potential first ladies is important. Most often than not, it turns out to be a distraction. Most often than not, Brother Brian, it turns out to be a means to promulgate very sexist notions about women's roles.
And it's going to be interesting to have the same conversation with you or other guests next week when we're in St. Paul and Cindy McCain gives her speech. I mean, yeah, Michelle Obama has a tough lift, and maybe Cindy McCain, with some of the things that the last caller was bringing up and some other things about her, you know, she'll have her own work cut out for her to look warm and fuzzy to the American people. Here's a little bit more of Michelle Obama from last night's speech.
And Barack stood up that day, and he spoke words that have stayed with me ever since. He talked about the world as it is and the world as it should be. And he said that all too often we accept the distance between the two and we settle for the world as it is, even when it doesn't reflect our values and aspirations. But he reminded us that we also know what the world should look like. He said, we know what fairness and justice and opportunity look like. And he urged us to believe in ourselves, to find the strength within ourselves to strive for the world as it should be. And isn't that the great American story?
Isn't that the great American story? Michelle Obama from her DNC speech last night, talking about a moment early in her relationship with Barack Obama. We're talking about this with you at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and with Professor Eddie Glaude Jr., Professor of Religion and African American Studies at Princeton, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Professor Glaude, I was struck, and this is why I played these two clips, by how much policy was in her speech and how much activism interwoven with the personal warm and fuzzy stuff. You know, she talked about her love for country, she talked about the American story, the American dream, but also what they hope to change from Bush administration economic policy most of all. Were you surprised by that?
Well, no, because I take it that, I mean, I think Michelle Obama is just simply a brilliant woman, and so I thought she held her own in terms of the campaign's talking points. And so I particularly love the segment that you just played, because she came back with a wonderful declarative sentence: the world as it is just won't do. And so there's a way in which she posited the idealism of the campaign in relation to the actual policy initiatives as a way of kind of moving people out of their comfort zones to actually address the substantive crisis that the nation faces. And I thought it was a wonderful way in which the campaign introduced or reintroduced Barack Obama to the American people, and at the same time that you get, as you call it, the warm and fuzzy stuff, right, the faith, the family, the hard work, Barack Obama as an embodiment of the enduring American dream, you also had talking points about actual policy. And I thought that was really, really important. And she did a very good job at it, and suggests that she, in the election coming in the campaign against McCain, she will continue to do a great job.
Let's take another call. Shrikant in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. A great show, Brian.
Thank you.
My quick comment was, I don't know how it touched me, but I found myself very emotional after the speech. And the funny thing is, I'm not even an American now. On track for citizenship in 2011, and when I take my pledge, I will be thinking of the speech, because where I come from, I'll be very cynical about politicians, and this was a really nice moment.
Thank you very much. And let's go right on to our next caller, Gary in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Gary.
Hello. Overall,
what did you think of the speech?
Yes, I found Michelle to be very impressive, and I was very impressed with her family. But kind of a skeptical New Yorker. I found it to be so scripted.
I've never heard of such a thing. I've never heard of such a thing, a skeptical New Yorker. But go ahead, Gary.
Well, you know, born and raised here, you got to try to be skeptical at least. It was so scripted. It was so saccharine. If it was a friend or a neighbor that was telling me all this, I'd be very embarrassed. You know, it was just went over the top for me.
What did you want to hear? What would have made you happier?
Well, I guess I would have wanted something more rousing.
Something, unfortunately, we're losing your call. I think we have another caller who wants to make a similar point, actually. Can we go right? This is Janice. Janet. Janet,
yes,
you're on WNYC. Are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm a big fan of the show.
Thanks.
I basically really like Michelle Obama, and I wanted to hear a very strong delivery, and I thought it was very, very, this is a personal analysis, not a political analysis. I realized what she had to do to combat the whole thing about, not being proud of her country, but it was so much in the opposite direction, and I just kept yearning for a Hillary sort of character. I'm a Hillary supporter, and I wanted a harder edge. Not a hard edge, but just not so much of this. I found the tone of her voice. It was yearning. It was sort of sing-songy. I don't know. I turned it off.
It was just too nicey-nice for you.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for your call. Well,
sure.
Eddie Glaude Jr., that's the line that she has to walk, right? And there was sort of the specter of Hillary as the other woman hanging over last night, do you think?
Absolutely. And first of all, we should say that these conventions are all scripted. It's going to be rare that we find someone off script. And so when we saw the Ted Kennedy moment, that's what made it so powerful, beyond just simply the courageous act of him coming, because it was in some significant way not quite on script. In terms of Hillary Clinton, I mean, we can think about the extraordinary tightrope she had to walk as a potential first lady with Bill Clinton. And when she tried to, in some significant way, present her softer side, the same thing was said of her. When she tried to present herself as a smart, accomplished, a brilliant thinker, policy, imaginative with regards to policy, people worried that she would overshadow, that she would intrude, in other words, break the mold of the traditional first lady. So it's interesting that then we hearken back to the Hillary Clinton post-White House, post the run for the White House, as a marker for, or as a measure for Michelle Obama.
Right.
She's just simply going through the same thing that Hillary Clinton went through. And it seems to me that Hillary supporters should be absolutely sympathetic and empathetic to what she's going through.
All right. We're almost out of time. I don't want to give short shrift, but we will a little bit, to the very moving Ted Kennedy speech last night. Then we have standing by a woman who I'm calling perhaps the most important campaigner for Barack Obama who you never heard of, Karen Ackerman from the AFL-CIO, because along the lines of what we've been talking about, Professor Glaude, one of the disturbing for Obama supporters poll numbers that's come out recently is how much he has dropped in the eyes of labor union members in America, from about a 60% approval rating in February to about 35 now. And I think that has to do with, bitter and clinging to guns and religion and maybe reverend rights, since most union members are white working class and all that stuff. And we'll get into how the AFL-CIO is launching a massive campaign to combat that and to also draw down John McCain's image. So we'll do that next with Karen Ackerman. But Ted Kennedy, I think even Republicans may have been moved by him last night, battling brain cancer, a surprise appearance as far as the public was concerned, maybe a kind of farewell address, we might even call it. Here is 2 minutes of it.
We are told that Barack Obama believes too much in an America of high principle, and bold endeavor. But when John Kennedy thought of going to the moon, he didn't say, it's too far to get there. We shouldn't even try. Our people answered his call and rose to the challenge. And today, an American flag still marks the surface of the moon. Yes, we are all Americans. This is what we do. We reach the moon. We scale the heights. I know it. I've seen it. I've lived it. And we can do it again. There is a new wave of change all around us. And if we set our compass true, we will reach our destination. Not merely victory for our party, but renewal for our nation. And this November, the torch will be passed again to a new generation of Americans. So with Barack Obama, and for you, and for me, our country will be committed to his cause. The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on.
Cheers and tears at the Democratic Convention in Denver last night, hearing Ted Kennedy in kind of a valedictory address intone those words. Eddie Glaude, Jr., your reaction? Oh, we've lost Eddie Glaude? Okay, let's see. Do we have any callers who are reacting specifically to Kennedy? Do we have any callers? Let's see while we try to get Eddie Glaude back. Anybody reacting specifically to Kennedy, or is it all Michelle Obama? All right, let's go to Nick in Cliffside Park.
Hello.
Nick?
Hello, Brian.
Hi.
Hi,
talk
Brian.
To me about Ted Kennedy. Hi.
Hi, Brian. You want me to talk about Ted Kennedy?
Go
or
ahead.
Michelle?
Ted Kennedy, if you, I called to talk about both.
I think what Ted Kennedy did was humanize the Obama campaign and make the associations he had to make to the Kennedy tradition of common human decency. And I think it's a shame that Michelle Obama, you asked the question about why she had to give that speech. And I think the reason she had to give that speech is because at the core, the McCain campaign is attacking Obama and Michelle because they're black. I really believe that that's the core of their attack. And Michelle has to make it clear that she's a human being, her family are human beings. And even prejudiced people, when they meet people who are of the other color and they get to know them as human beings, those prejudices fall away. So that's why she had to do what she had to do. And she was not designed to appeal to Hillary voters who were going to vote for Obama anyway, like that lady who called earlier. She couldn't give a policy speech. Her job last night was to simply prove that she was a decent human being, and she succeeded
right.
at that.
Nick, thanks a lot for your call. Eddie Glaude, give me 30 seconds on Ted Kennedy, and then we got to go.
It was a brilliant speech. I thought what was so powerful about it, beyond just simply the courageous act of showing up, was the willingness on the part of Ted Kennedy to just simply pass the torch, to recognize that the nation was at the moment at the precipice of change and in need of genuine renewal, and to actually pass the torch on to another generation of leadership, whether that's Barack Obama or not. We saw the old guard, represented by Ted Kennedy, suggesting and demanding and powerfully articulating that it's time for something different, time for substantive change. And that, to me, was powerful for those of us who were born in the aftermath of the 60s and 70s struggle. So I was just enraptured. I was just, shall we say, glued to the moment. It was powerful.
Eddie Glaude, Jr. from Princeton, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Karen Ackerman from the AFL-CIO next, the most important campaigner for Barack Obama who you never heard of, after a few more seconds of Ted Kennedy.
Barack Obama will close the book on the old politics of race gender and group against group and straight against gay. And Barack Obama will be a commander-in-chief who understands that young Americans in uniform must never be committed to a mistake, but always to a mission worthy of their bravery.
WNYC. Follow us on Twitter during these two convention weeks. Just sign up to follow Brian Lehrer, my name, one word, on twitter.com, or watch for my updates throughout the day on the WNYC.org homepage. Now, one of the most important people you never heard of for the success of Barack Obama's presidential campaign. She is Karen Ackerman, political director of the AFL-CIO, and with the doubts among many in the white working class, Obama is not a lock with union members, and the polls are reflecting it. So the AFL-CIO is spending more than $50 million to try and assuage their members' doubts about Obama and to plant seeds of doubt about McCain. And we'll talk about how in that respect, too. So, Karen Ackerman, thanks a lot for coming on WNYC with us. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And just to set the context, I read that in February, 57% of union members said they had a favorable impression of Obama. That compares to only 35% just recently. Has he really been declining much in all year with your members?
No, he has not been declining, and I just wanted to correct that. And that was in February, 57% of union members had a favorable impression of McCain. And we have been able to reverse that because of the communication program that we have.
Oh, that's of McCain.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Of McCain. But, no, the numbers for Obama among union members are have increased dramatically.
But I also have seen that they are not what they were at this point for, or at the point of the election in 2004 for John Kerry.
That is
so
true.
You have some work to do for Obama that you didn't have to do for Kerry.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We know that many union members do embrace Obama and really understand that that he is the best candidate to rebuild the middle class. There is a section of union voters, like in the general public, that are hesitant about Senator Obama. They are not some are not familiar with him. Some have never heard of him. There's been an intensive rumor campaign by the McCain operation to try to have people think that he's not patriotic, to have voters think that he's not a Christian, to have voters think that he doesn't wear a flag pin, those kinds of rumors. And we are have launched a campaign to make sure that union voters and union families understand exactly that those kinds of rumors are not true, and that in fact Barack Obama stands for all the things that middle-income, working-class families need, which is universal health care coverage, reinvestment in this country, creating jobs in this country, creating green jobs in this country, saving Social Security. You know, there is a really sort of understanding among union voters that the Bush administration policies on these economic issues have been disastrous for this country, and that McCain would just be four more years of the Bush policies shifting.
So since Obama hurt his own cause in this respect with that bitter and cling to guns and religion remark back during the Pennsylvania primary, that has really stuck with a lot of people. Plus, maybe, you know, race is involved here too, and maybe Reverend Wright in addition, which also broke out in February. That adds an extra wrinkle to your task. But what does that mean that you have, in a way, a very traditional Democratic Party fight on your own, on your hands. You know, that kind of harkens back to Robert Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas, where you're trying to convince white working class Americans that by voting Republican, they're going to be voting against their economic interests, even if they don't think the Democratic candidate shares their, quote, values.
Well, we, you know, union voters are very similar to voters in the population at large. And there are a segment of union voters, like others, that are unclear about what they're, who they're going to vote for in this election. And we face that with every election, in 2004, in 2000. And so our program is really focused on those voters, to give those voters who may not have all the information about who John McCain is, about how Barack Obama will stand with working families, to really give those union voters the information about where these candidates stand on the issues. And the fact is that there is no other organization in this country that can reach these kinds of voters, these working class voters who are unsure about the stakes involved in this election and unsure about who Barack Obama is. And it's really the value of the labor program and the value of a union communicating to its members, an organization that fights for them every day on the job, and making sure that union voters know, you know, where McCain stands on trade, on job export, on the right for workers to have a union and bargain collectively, and where Barack Obama stands. And that's our job, and that's what we're doing.
And I've double-checked those stats, and it looks like you're right. In February, 57% of union voters had a positive view of McCain, compared with 35% in the most recent polls, according to figures that you've cited in the past. So I just want to make that clear to our listeners that I stand corrected when I said that was pertaining to Obama earlier. What we do also have is 59% supporting Obama, compared to 68% of building trade workers voting for Kerry in the last presidential election. So that was a building and construction trades AFL-CIO poll, just to be really clear about that. Let me get into one of these issues on which you're trying to drag down McCain.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen from some of your notes that you've got hundreds of flyers in the anti-McCain toolkit tailored, kind of micro-targeted to specific issues and specific groups of union members. You have flyers, what teachers want to know about McCain, what industrial workers want to know about McCain, and things like that. And some of the facts, one of the things that you said, the fact that his plan taxes health care benefits, that deeply resonates with your members. You want to talk about that?
We produce thousands, frankly, of flyers, information pieces about the positions of the candidates, and you know we've endorsed. We'll be active in over 500 races. The presidential, of course, being very important. And because unionized workers in this country come from all kinds of industries, public sector, private sector, construction trades, steel workers, communication workers, firefighters, teachers, that there are issues that that all working families care about, like quality universal health care coverage that's really hurting so many folks by not having any coverage. And yet there are specific issues that these different workers care about. So our program is really tailored to identifying what issue, union member by union member, what issue each cares about. And because we talk to a lot of union members, there are discussions on the jobs, we walk union members to union households, so we have a lot of information union member by union member, and we identify those union members that do have questions about where the candidates stand and do our best to answer those questions.
And on the McCain health care plan, one of the things that he would do is place a tax on health care benefits, which are now untaxed.
Yeah.
Employees pay income tax on their incomes, but not on their health care benefits. McCain wants to change that, partly because he says it's unfair to people who are self-employed. Then he wants to issue a tax credit or tax deduction. And at the Republican convention next week, we'll be talking more about that.
Yeah.
But you single out that part of it as landing badly with workers who currently have health care through their job. So if that started being taxed, that would certainly accrue to their disadvantage. One other thing, on another issue that's obviously important to labor, free trade, because Obama has become a little suspect in this arena. He has said that he would renegotiate NAFTA from scratch or withdraw from the treaty. And at the same time, he reportedly reassured Canada that he was just blowing smoke and that he had to say those kinds of things about threatening to withdraw from NAFTA, had to say those things for the Democratic primary. So where does he really stand? Can you tell at the AFL-CIO?
We're very confident that Barack Obama and the and Obama administration would be certainly very favorable and steadfast in its support for negotiating, taking a look at the trade agreements that now do exist that are very unfair, not only to workers in this country but to workers abroad.
And this is a big shift from the Bill Clinton era Democratic Party. He led the party toward more so-called free trade, and the trend now is against with the Democrats and for it with McCain. So that's another contrast. So specifically, before you go, what would it mean specifically to put better labor and environmental standards into NAFTA? What are some of the specific policies along those lines other than just, putting up tariffs?
Well, I think what that would mean is a shift in the domestic policy as well as foreign policy in this country, and it would mean that you wouldn't just shift jobs from the United States to low-wage countries abroad. The point is to create a policy both at home and internationally that lifts all boats, where workers in this country can thrive, that there's a reinvestment program in this country, as well as making sure that wages in low-wage countries, that there's not an incentive for corporations to move, that you lift the environmental and wage standards in other countries around the world, too, so that all workers benefit.
Let me take one call for you.
Sure.
Joe in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Karen Ackerman from the AFL-CIO campaigning for Obama. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I used to be an organizer for the United Cap Millinery Workers Union, late 50s and through most of the 60s, and then a business agent for 32B for a while before I went into another profession. The workers were wonderful people. They were all very liberal, but racism ran throughout throughout the community, not in a diatribe type of way. If I'm moving over to Long Island to get away from, and there would be the N-word. Among many of the wonderful liberal Jewish workers, Schwarzer was thrown around all the time. So thank God that Schwarzer didn't come into my thing. The thing is that many of these workers grew up, as I did, in segregated neighborhoods, and neighborhoods which incidentally are still segregated. And many of them, not being college educated and so on, they were very liberal regarding economic issues involving their rights.
Do you know, you're still in touch with some of those friends? You think those folks are voting for Obama or McCain?
I think the older ones and the from that generation and the older ones that are still working or the ones that are still retired, I'm most of them would be voting for McCain only because of racism. And this other issue.
Joe, thank you. I got to go because we're running out of time. But Karen Ackerman addressed that because probably he echoes what a lot of people, who are Obama supporters think or fear about white working class union members of all different white ethnicities and religions.
No, I think that's a very valid point, and we certainly are addressing that. Is that there certainly is a component, not totally, but a component of some level of race bias that is preventing some workers, some voters from seeing Obama and how strong he'll be for working families. And I think that's part of what the FL-CIO program does, and that is it peels away those layers, really gives voters the information. We get out the information about those fears, and really it's based on information. Where does McCain stand on job creation? Where does McCain stand on the right for workers to have a union? Where does McCain stand on health care? And where does Barack Obama stand? The country, the middle class in this country, due to...
So you're trying to fight bias with shining light on issue positions.
With information. That's exactly right.
All right. And that's where we leave it with Karen Ackerman, political director of the AFL-CIO, perhaps the most important campaigner for Barack Obama who you never heard of. Thanks a lot for coming on with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Up next, we'll continue our Meet the Delegate series with a delegate named Gridley Johnson from Virginia. Stay with us. We continue with our Meet the Delegate series right now. Tell us where you're from and what's great about your hometown.
I'm from Chesapeake, and what's great about Chesapeake is that we are a very inclusive and very diverse city.
Chesapeake, Virginia.
Chesapeake, Virginia.
How are things in Chesapeake right now?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We're all excited about the election of Barack Obama, and Mark Warner is the next U.S. Senator from Virginia.
What issues are people thinking about and talking about?
The basic issues: education, economics, a job, health care, just trying to make it from day to day. We want the American dream. We want what everyone wants. We're not asking not to be rich, but to be able to make it, not have to choose between education, health care, daycare, elder care. I was a former caregiver. And, you know, those are all the issues that we're talking about. I'm a baby boomer.
Are you feeling a change in people's quality of life or the affordability of life in the last year?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I'm fortunate. I have a very good job. I love my job. But all my friends are not that lucky. I have people who are concerned about health care, friends who are working for themselves and having to pay their own hospitalization. That's hard. Extremely hard. I have friends who have kids in school. They have to pay for their college education. They're trying to figure out how they're going to do that. I mean, you shouldn't have to choose between this. People who have nice homes, whose homes now are in maybe foreclosed on because they got into this mortgage crunch. So there's some very serious issues out here now, and we need someone who's going to take us to that next step.
Whose delegate were you elected as?
I'm an Obama delegate.
What does it mean to be an Obama Democrat right now?
I can't explain it to you. As I said, I'm a baby boomer. I am just amazed that in my lifetime, and I wish my parents could be here to see this, because I am active because of my father. When I turned 18, my father made me go register to vote before I got my gift. And if you lived in his house, you voted at 6 o'clock in the morning when he voted. But to me, to be an African-American female, to see a woman go as far as Hillary Clinton did, and to see Barack Obama getting ready to make that next step, I am enthused. I can't tell you how happy I am.
What is the worst thing you fear John McCain would do if he gets in?
The status quo, the same old, what we have right now. And I'm also afraid that if he is elected, what he may would do to the Supreme Court.
What makes this country great?
What makes this country great is that we get to have an opportunity. What makes it great that I'm standing here talking to you. What makes it great is that my father worked hard to get me to where I am and has taught me that I have to pull somebody else up.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you're following the presidential campaign, sign up for our podcast, Digesting Politics. Every week, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I talk about the race over lunch and send it to you free. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. We'll be recording a new one in Denver this week. Sign up for free at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And we're talking all this week with reporters from WNYC's Feet in Two Worlds immigration series in conjunction with the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. And with me now as part of that series, Ashwini Anborojan, reporting here for Feet in Two Worlds. Ashwini, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thanks, Brian. How are you?
So you're looking at how the issue of immigration is playing at these conventions. I don't see it being highlighted very much so far. Do you?
No, I don't think immigration is going to be happening on the main stage with the main speakers. But it's a big focus on people who are attending the convention and the panels that are happening outside of it. There are a lot of groups coming together trying to figure out how to make the immigrant vote matter in this election, because it's going to be one on the margins. And so you have Latino panels and panels with Asian Americans really trying to drive up enthusiasm with that vote. And what we're finding is that the Obama campaign, though his personal story has a lot of appeal for immigrants, he still has a long way to go in terms of pushing out and turning up those turnout numbers. They have to be bigger.
And McCain is the sponsor of the so-called McCain-Kennedy comprehensive immigration reform.
Right.
So does Obama have anything on John McCain in this arena, say with people from your background, Indian Americans?
He does, in the sense that they find his personal story really appealing. It's not with, let's say, Indian Americans, it's not as much of an issue. It's in terms of immigration. They're much more interested in foreign policy and things like the U.S.-India nuclear deal, terrorism. You saw what was happening in Pakistan over the last 48 hours. That's the focus with this community. But overall, I think the focus very much is on the economy, it's on trade, it's what's going to happen. And they're very similar in those respects with the Indian American community, I think, in particular.
Do Indian Americans generally vote more Democratic or Republican in national elections?
They say that they vote 4-1 Democratic in national elections. There was a trend where they were going Republican for a while, but once the Bush administration came in, they veered away from the Republican Party. They're raising a lot of money. I just went to two events yesterday where they're these communities, I mean, in the past, in 3 weeks, in over the course of July and August, the Indian American South Asian community raised $1.5 million for Barack Obama's campaign over the course of events, fundraisers in New York and just D.C.
But when you see a crisis in Pakistan like is taking place right now, when you see the debate over the Indian nuclear deal, does that go to the benefit of the Republican Party, given the positions they take on things like that?
I think it could help them. But I think that there's a strong push among Democrats to get that deal through. I went to an event yesterday between Indians and Jewish Americans, really stressing that the U.S.-India nuclear deal is good for Israel. And so Jewish politicians and the Jewish constituency should really get behind it. And so there's a battle of backroom dealing happening at the conventions, too, to push these agendas forward, no matter who the president is.
That was a policy event here in Denver, right?
Right.
Outside
yes,
the actual convention. Tell me a little about that. You were there. I heard that was a little intense.
It was. It was a very serious discussion, very candid and very frank. The one amusing part about it was they had little lapel flag pins that linked India, Israel, and the U.S. flags together to show that this is what's going forward. But the push was that this is a deal that should go forward because it gives Israel cover if, though Israel has not acknowledged having nuclear weapons, that there's a belief that they do have one. And if there is a country that's not part of this five country club that has nuclear weapons, that it allowing India to have them, giving them the opportunity to fully acknowledge and have a weapons program, have nuclear material, have nuclear energy, is going to be good for Israeli security. It's going to strengthen. It's going to give Israel cover, is what that was the term that Congressman Ackerman from Kansas, for example, used.
Is this your first convention, Ashwini?
It is not my first convention. 4 years ago, I was an opposition researcher for John Kerry, and so I got to come up and see the... But we stayed in a basement and Googled all day long.
That's what opposition researchers do. Well, India is famous for being the world's largest democracy.
Right.
And consistently since 1948, therefore one of the oldest. So how do you compare, and how do you think Indian Americans who know Indian electoral politics compare the choosing process for a head of state here and there?
Well, the irony is that educated Indians don't really participate in politics in India. It's a new trend because politics is a dirty word. There's corruption, there's graft. My mother once said to me, why do you want to go into politics? This is when I just graduated. Politicians are not good people. So that's the difference in the American political process here, that they see something that's really above the bar, that is supposed to be an ethical process. And I think that what you're seeing now, as there's a rise of second-generation Indian Americans, there's a lot of enthusiasm for it. There's a surge in activism. They're getting their parents to give money. They're getting their parents to get involved. And that's why Democratic parties in Ohio and Virginia are really pushing the Indian vote and hoping to turn out a lot more people.
Wait, you mean Indian Americans think that Indian presidential or prime ministerial politics are corrupt, but American presidential politics aren't?
I think they think they're a little bit cleaner, yes.
All right. Ashwini Amburjan, she is with the Feed Into Worlds immigration series from WNYC, in addition to the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Thanks a lot for coming on, and good luck as you continue to cover the convention for Feed Into Worlds.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick reminder that as we stay out here in Denver for this nominating convention and then go to St. Paul, our 30 Issues in 30 Days nominating process is now underway at WNYC.org. And we invite you to nominate an issue for our upcoming presidential election issue series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. We'll vote on your issues next month. You can nominate one now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.